This is BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. In this episode, we're going to talk to Drew Husteady about sustainability and BSA's Sustainability Action Plan. Drew Husteady is BSA's sustainability lead and a senior architect. He graduated from Rankin Technical College with a BS in Architecture and Architecture Technology and earned his Master of Architecture from Southern Illinois University. Drew came to BSA in early 2025 from Trainer, where he was an associate principal and sustainability champion. He is NCARB certified and LEED AP Building Design and Construction certified through Green Business Certification, Inc. Welcome to the show, Drew. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Brian.
Well, it's great to have you on. And as a first-time guest on the show, I don't know if you've listened to any of the previous podcasts, but I like to get a little background. How did you get here? So where does your passion for architecture and sustainability come from?
Oh, man. So August 19th, I'm kidding. Now, I would give complete credit to my father, actually. He taught religion at a local high school, but he also taught building trades and he painted on the side at night. And he invited me to all those job sites. And I remember throughout most of my childhood helping him paint at night and going into each one of these homes, building these houses from scratch, just getting that exposure, but also his wonderful humility had me very curious about, well, why is that skylight there? Why is this kitchen so small? And that curiosity, I think, is vital, as I've come to learn, in architecture and even sustainability. And really, they're one and the same, and mostly because they're problem solving, right? And so as I became very curious about how buildings come together, really why a design decision was made or why that wall is there, what impact it has on people, what the space feels like, that really inspired me to kind of take that course. Even in high school, just that was in my mind. In college, just understanding that it's a very reasonable approach. You know, it's not just like you have to be the most perfect thing, the most perfect building. Otherwise, it's just a waste. There's little steps you can take, right? So I think I give credit to my dad for starting me on the journey, really, and exposed me to it. And then throughout my entire, I guess, the rest of my life after that, right? And I could go in for another 10 minutes, Brian, about just my life story at a butcher shop in high school.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, all of this that kind of, I think, really adds up in the whole algorithm to here I am at BSA in 2026, right? Leading this effort. And I'm really looking forward to what we can do at BSA, frankly, in that part of the conversation. But I think overall, it's just what I can do, what we can do.
Right.
As an industry to kind of ask those curious questions, be humble about what we're doing, take reasonable steps, and improve lives, you know, in the experience of our building.
You're not the first architect to say, I walk in and I look up and look around and I wonder why. I think it was Matt Amore and Joe Sagan. I had them on, in an earlier episode, and they were talking about going on vacation. I'll tell you, after a few guys, my wife and I went to Italy and France last summer, and I was constantly looking up every time I went in. And I'm not an architect, but I've heard you guys talk about it so much. And then when you know it, now the Olympics are going on right now currently and all this stuff from Milan. I just sit and stare at the screens when it goes to break, because we're watching through Peacock and it's doing the drone shots from around these buildings. And I'm like,
of course.
So your brains are just wired different. That's for sure. Was there a moment or a project where sustainability really clicked for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Early in my career, you know, I was heavily involved in public work, primarily juvenile adult detention court focused, and, you know, public work like that. That's sometimes you could, you know, when I say I was in the public realm, it can come off kind of very objective, like you're just following a certain rule. But this project was here actually in Missouri. It was a small local juvenile project. And the whole premise, the whole story of the project originates by the community wanting to do better for troubled youth. And that clicked.
Yep.
Because now I found a relationship between building and people physically in the work that I was doing. It wasn't a very large project, but it had massive impact on the community. And as we were designing that project and discussing the vision of it with that client, the county, we kept asking questions about, well, what does it mean to have daylight within this space that in a traditional setting 30 years ago in the same building probably wouldn't have happened? Or what would it feel like for that youth, that juvenile, when they wake up in the morning or when they're going to bed at night, when they're left alone? Is it an adult jail cell, steel and concrete, gray and
right,
monocolor, you know, monochromatic, or is it very well, you know, warm, welcoming, soft? Is it like the bedroom they have at home? And being able to elevate that conversation to even more tangible things, such as, well, now that we're studying daylight, is it too much daylight?
Right.
Will the mechanical system make sure this is a very comfortable setting for them? Or is it cold because it's very big? Even the gymnasium that we designed for them, for the youth there, promoted kind of a sense of calm. Like, this is kind of cool. This is engaging. This is where you're spending some energy shooting the basketball around.
Right.
But this isn't like a hard setting where it could overly stimulate you, right? So I think that project really taught me that you have to think about the people, the occupant. That's what it's about. And that can extend that priority toward people in the wellness of them, the experience that they have, the impact of that project can really grow and extend into the physical performance of the building. The client was engaged in that, those conversations, and that led them to open their minds up to other design strategies. I think on that project, no matter how small it was, one of the things that fascinated me about the project and the conversation with the client was this county is, the word sustainability, which I'm sure we'll get to here in a second, is completely relative. It means something different to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
To them, it was a bad word, right? It was the S word. It was the it costs money word, right?
Right.
The first meeting I remember having with them, they didn't want to talk about it. They scratched it from their municipal code, their building codes, from the IBC, all of that. It wasn't even part of their language. Second conversation we had with them after we started talking to them about the vision, the impact on youth. Well, this is really cool. Can we do geothermal?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, so you pay
that's
attention
part of that
to that. Without asking them, where'd this come from? It was like, absolutely. Opening doors to different conversations and just opening their minds to better ways to do things.
So you touched on it, and we've used the word sustainability. I've also heard resiliency. Say sustainability at BSA. What do we actually mean?
Depends who you ask. You know, depends what their background is. And while it's almost like a free for all word, it's a catch all, right?
Catch-all.
It means everything. Yeah. And so I think when we talk about sustainability, right, it's synonymous with good design.
Hmm.
So if we produce great design, it's also sustainable, right? Now, it could mean something different, say, to our clients. It could mean cost,
sure,
life cycle cost. It could mean a welcoming experience. It could mean just indoor health, right? Air quality, occupant health. We do healing here at BSA. It's so important to think about the health of our occupants, the users, the staff, the patients. That's sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. But it's such a big word. So I think one of the big things when we discuss sustainability is almost defining what it means to each individual or even that project up front, maybe without using the word sustainable. What's important to them? Like, what matters? What's impactful? Help them uncover that story, right? That's sustainable.
Yeah, but like you said, that's where if you start uncovering the story and what the impact can be, mm-hmm, you're not really talking about the S word, right?
Yeah, right.
Talking about what actually matters. And through mm-hmm the course of that, you can incorporate some of these things. I know you joined the firm a little over a year ago, and you've really stepped into the leader on the sustainability front and mm-hmm recently became our sustainability lead. Can you talk about the sustainability action plan and what the goal of that is?
Oh, 100%. I'm so excited about this, Brian. So I'm going to start in 2025, right? Because that's where it roots. In 2025, when I joined the firm last year, it was clear that we had a lot of different information in different places and balls were rolling, but not at the same pace. And not everybody was on the same page about it. So in 2025, it was more of an audit year. Where are we at? What do we have? What's missing? Where are the gaps? And I think we identified a lot of those in 2025. I don't want to say productive, but the real measure of success for sustainability really revolved around energy, energy efficiency, reporting to the AIA 2030 DDX, and trying to at least get a ball right on the tracks. In 2026, we have a lot more information about where each office and studio and even individual feel we are and how they want to get involved to improve what we're doing, improve design, improve sustainability at BSA. So in 2026, the action plan really revolved around getting everybody involved, multiple assets from marketing to visioning to engineering to interior design, marrying all of those to process, right? Even down to our policies inside of BSA, our role responsibilities. How are we making a difference holistically? And then finding measures of success to do that, right? We're not going to design the most perfect building this year, maybe probably not even next year, the year after that. It's these steps in the right direction for these different measures of success and these different metrics, these different avenues. I think we can take a holistic approach in 2026 with this action plan.
So I want to keep diving into it, but I do think it needs to be stated, and I want it to come from you. How does sustainability connect to BSA's focus on healing, learning, and discovery?
Dynamite question, right? And I think when BSA identified healing, learning, and discovery, these are our main clients, right? What does it mean to them? We've been circling the answer to that for years and really making sustainability part of it, but we just haven't paid attention, I think, intentionally on the bigger picture of it all. Our clients in healing, they're focused on patient experience, staff engagement, efficiencies, right? Healing. In our learning studio, they're focused on teaching and learning and environments for education. In our discovery, it's really the resiliency of those labs. Those are huge energy consumers, right? With the fume hoods, all of the plug load that goes into those, massive, right? So there's, I think in each one of these avenues, it almost touches on most of what sustainability is, you know, from the occupant experience down to the metrics, energy, even carbon. I think all of those, and we, like I said, we circle that answer on most of those projects, but we don't attack it, I think, meaningfully yet. So
let's jump back into the action plan. What are some of the challenges that the plan is designed to solve, and where have you felt like you've made the most progress, or we as a group have made the most progress?
So the first was, I would start with setting the ship to course. We're heading east, and the destination is our big, hairy, audacious goal. At BSA, by 2040, we will be carbon-free by design, simply put.
Right.
It's 14 years from now.
Yep.
Yeah, we got time, but we have a lot of groundwork to make. I would say that's the first step in identifying the course. The second step is identifying those, like I said, little measurables, those little baby steps to get there, making sure everybody's engaged and asking questions, building that curiosity, that same curiosity that I gained as a kid with my father. Right. How, why, what's going on? What is the reason for this? Couldn't this be better? Then I would kind of change that to say it's the conversation, right? Or evolve that to say it's the conversation. So not only are they curious and humble, are they having those conversations? And I'll proudly state right today that since the first of this year, January 1st, I have seen more conversation in the last month and a half than I did all in 2025. Yeah. It's every day, all the time, overwhelming and exciting.
It's like pushing, what's the old metaphor? You know, you're pushing a rock up a hill and you're like, are we even moving it? And then all of a sudden you get to the top and that momentum starts to go. And now it's actually, because I was going to make a joke about, you mentioned there were a lot of different balls. We had to get using the same ball. Like if this were a sports analogy, it's like some people are using a football, others are using a tennis ball, others are using a basketball. What sport are we playing here? What's an example that comes to mind of how, in your opinion, the plan has changed how some of our teams are designing or making decisions? Anything come to mind there?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that our engineering team, one of the things that fascinated me throughout 2025, I would say, you know, when we started having conversations and asking questions in mid-2025 to the end of 2025, one of the greatest shifts, I'll say, that I witnessed, I wasn't even the first to call it out. I heard it several times when I met with a lot of our colleagues in Engage. last week in Indianapolis, and they said, holy cow, we're talking about this. And this was in the engineering team. And I have to give our engineering leaders some kudos on that, because it went from, well, this isn't realistic. You know, it's expensive. My client's not going to want to do this. We're hamstrung by when the lead architect brings us into the project. By the end of 2025, the questions were about, well, what can we do better? Let's let's try to study this. What's the tool? Can we assign somebody to this? And now, like I said, since January 1st, the conversations all the time, every day. I think I sit on a call once or twice a day, helping teams, helping our champions, helping other teams have those conversations. What does that client engagement look like? What's the presentation look like? How do we study our wall envelope, right, to talk about energy efficiency, to talk about embodied carbon reduction? It's I think there was a big stride there, Brian, and I have to give kudos to everybody involved.
I want to hone in on that. Where do you think you've seen the biggest mind shift internally? Because I've been here for almost 3 years now, and you're right. Like, something has definitely shifted, and I'm just trying to get your pulse on where that shift has come from.
The younger, I think, individuals at BSA, most of our leadership have really tried to build, or I should say, conquer, overcome that inertia. Everybody start thinking about it. Our younger individuals have so much potential to change what we're doing on our projects. And I've seen a lot of questions come in, a lot of initiative being taken, even if they don't know. And I think that's the biggest thing. They're curious about what can we do? You know, right. I had a question this morning from a team member on one of our projects that said, I'd really like to get involved, but I don't know what to do. Like, can you tell me where can I start?
Can you shepherd me? Yeah.
It's like, I don't even care if you do anything at this point. You just made my day by asking. So I think the younger generation has that potential. I think that's the greatest mindset shift in our company at the moment.
So then how does the action plan show up on our actual projects?
Great question, because there's a lot of things in that action plan, right? I talked about what we're looking at in the 2026 action plan holistically. You know, it's almost, I envision like a wheel of things trying to come in and do their part in the middle. Our engineering team, and I'll use some very specific examples here. We're looking at setting a goalpost at BSA by possibly signing up to the MEP 2040, which is a commitment, much like the AIA 2030 commitment to be carbon neutral in our building operations. But engineering needs to step up too. So it kind of gives them that goalpost to kick after. Yep. We're doing a very similar thing with our interiors team, with reviewing, possibly pledging, or making the AIA materials pledge.
Ooh.
It's kind of like a goalpost, or it's a guide. It's going to help them bring that reality to BSA. That actually is going to have to show up in our projects, much like the DDX does. How are the engineers thinking about it? How are the interior designers thinking about it? So I think by the end of 2026, what we're going to see is every project at BSA, it has to be part of the conversation, right? Engineering, interior design, architecture, planning, healing, learning, discovery, it's part of the conversation. So that I think the action plan is really trying to gear toward that.
So how do you, you're talking about the conversation, I guess, how early in a project does sustainability need to be a part of the conversation to really matter and like make a difference in some?
Well, you know, I won't be the first to say this, right? And I'm sure many listeners would probably have heard this too. The earlier, the better.
Right.
What is it though? Like, every project's a little different, I'm sure. I would love to see an RFP come across my table that says, we want to do a net zero building. That would be amazing, but it's like, I don't win the lottery every day. I don't ever win. So it's like, how do we strike gold there? I would say if that would be a dream that the client's thinking about it, but the first meeting really, and I beat that drum, you know, that first meeting, when you're talking about the goals, the schedule, you're talking about the vision of the project, what you're trying to start, right? It's that first chapter of the book. You're trying to open up that first chapter of the book, and it's going to set the course for the rest of the story. That needs to be involved. That needs to be included. The client should be able to tell you with some seed questions, what's important to you? It could be money, right? We need to make sure we adhere to the budget, or we need to adhere to the schedule. Those are very, very common. But what's the building about? Is it about the people? Is it about the research? Is it about the learning, the healing? What is it supposed to, what's the whole purpose of the building? Why are you here? That starts that conversation, right? What we can do to improve upon that and bring out the best story possible or the best outcomes for the client.
So you mentioned, I want to come back to something you were talking about. You had somebody reach out to you today and ask how they get involved. That
yep.
made me think of, there are different levels of sustainability fluency. I'll use that as a word here. How do you engage architects, engineers, and designers, interior team members who may be at those different levels to try to get everyone on the same page?
Meet them where they're at, internally, externally, client, team member, partner, affiliate, meet them where they're at. So, you know, a good example of this, like if I'm talking to a client, that's an easy one. It's an easy example. They're probably focused on more resiliency or durability, maintainability, but definitely cost. Don't make this inconvenient for me. Don't make it overly expensive. So when I engage with them, and they might not always be engaged about sustainability. In fact, many of my current clients aren't. How do I walk them into that door, right? You meet them where they're at. What does it mean to them? Even for like the individual this morning, how can I get involved? Well, the question I would ask them is, what are you curious about on the project? Because that tells me two things. Are they willing to work for whatever they're going to tell me?
Right.
And two, what do they think about? We don't get into these projects and we don't do what we do at BSA because it just makes us money. We actually love our work. We care about our clients and the occupants. We do a
right.
lot of research behind that. There's purpose. What's that individual's purpose? So if I ask them, what do you care about? What do you want to look at? What do you want to explore in this project? That tells me exactly what their passion is, or at least a little inkling of it. And so that to me is, you know, and it's usually sustainability. It's usually sustainability oriented. Well, I'd really like to explore making that interaction between staff and patient a little bit more efficient. So there's a well-being improvement there. I'd really like to explore maybe this solution in the patient room on, well, what does it feel like if I was in that patient room and experiencing what the patient was experiencing? Would I like it? I would really like to create a welcoming lobby that you knew exactly where you were at. It was comforting. It set the stage for your whole experience, right? That is like the conversation starter. It's just these little inklings of curiosity and what they want to bring to the project. And you'll see that kind of blossom and grow from that a little bit because it everything always affects everything else around it, I think.
Right.
I think individuals' curiosity is where it starts.
Well, and I hope our listeners can tell too. I love your passion on this. It's just, it's fantastic. I feel like I'm somewhat of a shepherd of these conversations because it's the curiosity in me that likes to ask the questions and learn about this stuff. When you hear the word sustainability as a regular person like me, my first thought is it's good for the planet and it's good for people, right?
Yep.
I do the iPhone upgrade thing every year and I watch their presentation because I'm all geeked out and they say, oh, we've changed this part out or we've done this and it's great for the environment. Or they've made commitments. I'm over there clapping like, this is great. I'm using a sustainable product.
Yeah.
My question is, those are a lot of technical things. So what does success look like culturally, not just technically?
Culturally, it's crazy. And that's honestly what I'm trying to say. It's behavior.
Right.
And it's almost like when we go about our day here at BSA, when I walk in the door at 8 or 8:30 and I leave by 5 to pick up my kid, it's almost like whatever I did in that time in working on the projects, I should have made an impact, but sometimes I don't even know it. A lot of folks here at BSA, they do a lot of that, right? I don't think they realize what they're doing. And as the culture continues to grow, it's almost like it's an atomic habit, right? It's like we're continuing to do something.
Yeah.
You're building the habits around it and eventually it's going to grow and it's just going to be what you do. And, you know, I look at, I call them top shelf firm. The firms that do it very, very well. It's part of what they do. It's their message. Can we do that or better?
Right.
And when you look at firms like that, you even go to their website, you talk to individuals there. It's just what they do, right? It's just what they talk about. It's just their identity, their culture. They don't look at it as an add-on. Like it's a thing that we have to, it doesn't get done unless we're really paying attention to it.
It
every time
of the normal everyday, right?
It's got to be subliminal to you. And so little steps make it a habit.
So I don't know if you did the atomic habit thing on purpose. Have you ever read James Clear's book?
I have, yeah.
So I think I'll just mention this for our listeners who may not know. I recommend the book highly. It really sets out to provide like a practical, science-backed kind of framework for building good habits and breaking bad ones through small changes, which is exactly what you're talking about. And that's what we're trying to do, of course. So what's next for BSA's sustainability efforts? And are there goals or areas you're especially focused on right now, maybe the first half of 2026? What are you looking at?
Yeah, so we're finishing up our DDX reporting. It's kind of like the leftovers from 2025, right? It's not like I get to December 31st and in a perfect world, I could hit the submit button. There's some lingering data out there. There's some pieces we're picking up for 2025, but we're issuing the action plan to the firm. And everyone's going to be aware of where they can kind of step up, right, and take initiative and get curious, right, and define their habits, their rocks, as we like to call them. But what we're really going to start doing in 2026 is, okay, now that 2025 is behind us, let's kick off all of those initiatives. Let's stay on top of it. Let's be proactive. We're doing the podcast, right, getting the message out as much as we possibly can, and then talking about it in each one of our projects. I can't tell you the number of times that someone's poked me and saying, hey, we're going after this project. How can we talk about sustainability? I said, just talk about good design. Just talk about what's important. That is already huge momentum. The rock is rolling, right? And I'm very excited for where 2026 can go. One of the things, though, that's important in 2026 is by the end of 2026, a lot of our workflows are going to be simple. They're going to be, I don't want to say automated like an AI thing, but we're going to have a lot of processes in place that enable those easier habits to form. It becomes less of a question on how do I, it starts to become a question on how can we do this quicker? How can we do this better? Right. Let's keep going. We've improved the project. Let's keep going. So it, you know, I always say the last quarter of 2026 is always the set us up for success quarter. Yep. Right, for 2027, what does that look like? As part of our action plan, we were thinking about 2026, 2030, 2035, 2040, and setting those milestones. And I'm hoping by the end of 2026, actually, it's almost more than a hope. I'm kind of anticipating that we're going to kick some serious butt in 2026. I'll get us closer to 2030 than we were originally anticipated. So
I love it. You already touched on the next thing I was going to ask you about. You know, what do you hope sustainability at BSA looks like in 3 to 5 years?
Okay, so this is great. So one of the references we made this year, or I should say look back on, was the progress of our competitors, other firms, comparing ourselves to others. And I hate comparing. I almost hate the word. We're not necessarily competing with many of these firms, but how can we learn from? How can we learn from the successes of others, rather? And we're seeing firms that do a lot of net zero energy or carbon neutral operable buildings, or they speak a really great game. They bring great impact to their clients from the occupant, from the people level, the human level. Can we do that? Or can we bring intention to our projects like they do? How do they do that? Right. And so by 2030, the one thing that we're looking at is being able to execute that on more than one project. Right. So by 2030, and we do great work, Brian, but I just don't think we know it well enough yet. We don't have enough information. It's not recorded.
Right.
I think by 2030, we're going to have a net zero energy building. I think that we're going to have a building that's cutting edge in one of our healing, learning, and discovery studios that no one has ever done before, right? Because we're trying very hard. I think BSA by 2030 is going to be viewed as a leader in the healing, learning, and discovery markets when it relates to sustainability as a whole, building performance, public health performance, I'll call it. By 2035, we're not going to be the same firm you see today.
That's awesome. I love this. All right. We're going to wrap up with some rapid fire questions. I want to try this with you.
This will be fun.
Don't think too long or, you know, answer too much, just whatever pops in your head. All right.
Yep.
First one is sustainability or resiliency, which is harder to explain to clients?
Sustainability. They'll make up their own definition.
What's a misconception about sustainability in architecture that you'd like to clear up?
It's easy. The cost one. Everyone's going to say that, right? It's really not a cost. There's cost problems involved. I think it's an education problem more than a cost problem.
And my last one is, what gives you optimism about where the industry is headed?
So everyone's read the recent news about what's happening at the federal level and pulling out of some 2009 research, which is devastating. The silver lining in all of this is I don't think the industry cares. I think they care enough to be offended. I think the industry is almost self-sustaining. The momentum is there. We're moving. And those have been those firms, clients that have been successful before will continue to be successful going forward.
I like it. Well, thanks for coming on the show. This has been great. I know we're going to have many more conversations in the future. So I can't wait to have you back on. But thanks for coming on and talking about the Sustainability Action Plan.
Oh, it's all my privilege, Brian. I really appreciate this, man. I look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Thanks. I'd like to thank Drew again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at BSA Design. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. And be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to check out BSA on social media, including LinkedIn and YouTube. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.